From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. I have just returned from a two-week jaunt to the Holy Land with my wife. Among our excursions, we had the privilege of taking part in an archaeological sifting project on Mount Scopus in Jerusalem. We took a day trip to the ancient Israelite fortress of Masada, as well as the biblical nature reserve of En Gedi, and an in-depth and educational visit to the biblical town of Shiloh and Beit El, and a one-day visit to the metropolis of Tel Aviv. Of course, postal issues are never far from my mind, even when on vacation. Every year, Israel Post, also known as the Israel Postal Company, receives thousands of letters from all over the world addressed to God. Rather than consider them dead letters, the letters are processed at a central mail facility in Jerusalem, and once a year, the letters are taken to the Old City and placed between the stones of the western wall of the Temple Mount, upon which the first and second temples of the Bible was once located. Also, you should know that the Israel Post is on the road to full privatization by the end of 2024. Enough about my vacation. On this week's Naps Chat, we're going to talk about a variety of political and legislative issues that have come to the forefront during the current post-election congressional lame duck session. One issue that received some media and legal attention is the mail theft suffered by the fourth-ranking member of the House of Representatives Republican Caucus, Elise Stefanik, who represents the rural upstate New York district formerly represented by postal hero Representative John McHugh, who chaired the House Subcommittee on the Postal Service over a decade ago. According to Representative Stefanik's attorney, on four separate occasions over the past one half year, parcels that included campaign checks were ripped open and its contents were removed. The contents included checks totaling about $20,000. Apparently, Stefanik is incensed by the Postal Service's lack of attentiveness in investigating this mail theft. The Congresswoman's attorney asserts in a letter to the Postmaster General, dated December 1st, that the Postal Service has been unresponsive to her inquiries about the status of the investigation. In that same letter, Stefanik's attorney demanded that the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, provide 1. A list of actions taken by the Postal Service to investigate the postal crimes, 2. Actions that would prevent future mail theft against Congresswoman Stefanik, and 3. A list of actions that the Postal Service will take to more effectively prevent, detect, and prosecute mail theft in New York and nationwide. As NAPS members, and particularly members of NAPS Branch 51, know full well, the explosion of mail theft has coincided with the two-year-old operational changes made by the Postal Inspection Service to restrict the authority of the Postal Police to prevent, investigate, and enforce crimes against the mail and postal personnel. In fact, according to Georgia State University's Cybersecurity Research Group, the number of stolen checks increased by a staggering 1,654% since the year 2022. NAPS has already reached out to Representative Stefanik and others in Congress to jumpstart the process to move forward legislation to restore the Postal Police Force's authority with regard to mail theft, legislation already introduced by Representative Andrew Garbarino of New York, as well as another bill introduced by Representative Eleanor Holmes Norton of the District of Columbia. On a related note, this past week, Republican members of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform brought before the committee a request for information about the Postal Service Inspection Service's surveillance program that the Republicans allege has been used to spy on conservatives. A resolution of inquiry is a simple House resolution making a direct request or demand of the president or the head of an executive department to provide specific factual information in his position to Congress. The program that the Republicans object to is called the Internet Covert Operations Program, conducted by the Postal Inspection Service. In May 2021, a bipartisan group from the House Oversight and Reform Committee requested that the Office of Inspector General conduct a review of the program. And in March of this year, the OIG concluded that the Postal Inspection Service exceeded its authority with regard to the program, and the Postal Service agreed to address the Inspector General's recommendations. However, this was apparently not enough for a number of Republican members of the House Oversight and Reform Committee, most notably Representatives Jody Heiss and Andrew Clyde, both of Georgia. Interestingly, as drafted, the resolution was directed at President Joe Biden rather than Postmaster General Louis DeJoy. As we know, President Biden does not have the authority over the Postal Inspection Service. In any case, the resolution of inquiry was defeated by the committee on a partisan vote. As we start ramping up for NAPS's annual legislative training seminar, we are focusing on the ill-conceived, resurrected benefit-cutting proposals that had been rejected by previous Congresses. NAPS is cognizant that the new Republican House majority will be scouring the federal budget to find ways to reduce the pandemic-induced budget deficit, along with the huge deficits rung up during the Trump administration. This past week, the Congressional Budget Office submitted to Congress its options to reduce the budget deficit over the next decade. Two of the Congressional Budget Office proposals should not be unfamiliar to the postal and federal employee community. The first one is, the Congressional Budget Office suggests that Congress replace the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program contribution formula with a healthcare voucher that is indexed to either the Consumer Price Index or the chained consumer price index. Under the current formula, the government and postal contribution increases generally reflect the increase in healthcare costs. Replacing the formula with the ones proposed by the Congressional Budget Office would shift the cost burden from the government and the Postal Service to the employees and postal and federal retirees. In total, the 10-year impact of this proposal would shift between $17.3 billion and $19.6 billion onto the shoulders of Federal Employees Health Benefits Program participants. The second proposal that the Congressional Budget Office is suggesting is to increase the employee contribution to the Federal Employees Retirement System to 4.4% for all FERS-covered employees. Presently, postal and federal employees hired prior to the year 2013 contribute 0.8% to the Federal Employees Retirement System, and those hired in the year 2013 contribute 3.1%. In other words, this increased contribution as proposed by the Congressional Budget Office would in fact be a 3.6% pay cut for those hired prior to 2013, and a 1.3% pay cut for those employed in the year 2013. The total 10-year impact of this proposal would be a $43.8 billion hit against federal and postal employees hired prior to the year 2014. Of course, other anti-postal and anti-federal employee and retiree proposals could also be offered, including changing the retirement formula for determining annuities that's currently based on the highest 3 years of salary to the highest 5 years. Also on the table could be cost of living adjustment cuts, as well as eliminating the Federal Employees Retirement System Social Security Supplement, which helps those who retire prior to Social Security eligibility. The last issue I'd like to talk about is the 2022 election cycle, which concluded with the re-election of Senator Raphael Warnock earlier this week. An interesting factoid to note, this is the first time in 108 years that no incumbent senator lost re-election in a general election. I might add that the 1914 general election was also the first time Americans were able to directly vote for U.S. senators as the result of the ratification of the 17th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Prior to ratification, state legislatures elected U.S. senators. As a result of Warnock's victory, the Democrats will hold a narrow 51-49 Senate majority, meaning they will no longer have to rely on Vice President Kamala Harris to break a 50-50 tie. Also, the Senate Standing Committees, which includes the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, will no longer be evenly split. The Democrats, beginning in January, will hold a one-seat majority on the committee and on each committee in the United States Senate. A major takeaway from the Georgia runoff elections was the importance and volume of early voting and mailed absentee balloting in determining the outcome of that runoff election. Over 190,000 Georgia voters mailed in absentee ballots. As a result of the impact of absentee ballots, state Republican parties all across the nation are reassessing their antipathy and lack of confidence in mailed ballots, rejecting the falsehoods leveled by former President Trump about absentee balloting, and it was open to fraud. With that being the last word this week, I want to thank NapsChat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy NapsChat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store, and more importantly, share NapsChat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make